This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
When hinges creak in doorless chambers, and strange and frightening sounds echo through the halls. Whenever candlelights flicker when the air is deathly still, that is the time when ghosts are present, practicing their terror with ghoulish delight. Welcome, foolish mortals, to the 601st episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. I am your host, your ghost host. Now that's an opening you probably did not expect. So Halloween is now behind us, and as I was handing out the candy to the little ghosts and goblins, I kept thinking about the Haunted Mansion attraction and how popular it was during October to both Disneyland and in Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. I was also wondering about how many guests visiting the attraction last month were born well after this attraction first opened in Disneyland, not to mention how many guests know exactly how long of a journey it was for Haunted Mansion from the time it first came up in Walt's brain to the day its gates opened in Disneyland. Over the years, I've learned a lot about this attraction from watching programs on television, reading books, and even chatting with an Imagineer and a cast member or two. From all this information gathering, I've always felt that what we experience today is pretty much Haunted Mansion version 5.0. It took a long time for this attraction to finally make its debut, and during that time, there were pretty much about four different major ideas or approaches to what the attraction should be until the dust settled and we got what we see today. It's an interesting story, and well, let's get to it. And along the way, think about what aspects of the Haunted Mansion attraction perhaps, just perhaps, may have impacted you on a personal note. I'll tell you mine later. But first, let's enter a time machine and go back to 1951, where an argument can be made that the origins for the idea of a haunted house area in a Disney theme park first surfaced in 1951 when Walt Disney, sitting on that park bench watching his daughters on that carousel, thought of a family amusement enterprise that the whole family could enjoy. And amidst his thoughts were the components that would make up such an enterprise. One of those components was a haunted house area. As Walt became more and more convinced that a family amusement park was an idea that he wanted to pursue, he knew that step one was to assemble a group of ideas that included the various components of this future amusement park. The best way to envision these components was to have an artist's conception of these areas. So, enter art director Hopper Golf, who Walt assigned to put together sketches based on Walt's ideas of what components would best work in such an amusement park. And of course, one of those components was that haunted house area. And one of Goff's sketches depicted an overgrown cemetery graveyard with a haunted Victorian-style house in the background and a church to the side. The sketch intrigued Walt. Remember that first and foremost, the Disney company grew on its film legacy. Walt's knowledge of the popularity of horror movies probably fueled his passion to develop a very spooky area in his plans for an amusement park. I want everybody to keep in mind, again, we're in 1951, so we are at least 4 years and change from the opening of Disneyland. And By the way, when Disneyland opened in 1955, nope, the Haunted Mansion was still on the drawing board. So let's go to 1955. Disneyland opened, and obviously it was proven to be a success. So 1957, 58 came around, and Walt began making plans for an expansion. And he actually announced his expansion plans in 1958 on a during a BBC interview. He mentioned the area of the park that eventually would become New Orleans Square. It would be one of the major areas of expansion. With that expansion, he would have a, quote, haunted house area. Now, the other, here's a little bit of trivia. What a lot of people don't know is that Walt also wanted to include some sort of a wax museum in these expansion plans, but obviously that never happened. One of the memorable things Walt said when he was talking about these haunted house plans was that he wanted a, quote, a retirement home for all the ghosts in the world to go to, and hence he was going to build it. Walt could not oversee every individual project in these expansion plans, so he started dishing out assignments, and the Haunted Mansion, a haunted house area assignment, fell on the hands of an animator by the name of Ken Anderson. The decision had already been made as to where in Disneyland this haunted house area would be. So now the goal was to figure out exactly what could be built in this area. And oh, by the way, remember, Disney Company, it's a movie company. So Walt just didn't want an attraction. He wanted a story. So Ken Anderson went to work. And it's important to note that Anderson's first sketch showed a rundown, ramshackled structure. And Walt did not like that. He did not want the outside of the haunted house mansion area to look that way. So he then took that sketch, brought it to another Imagineer by the name of Sam Kim. And he upgraded the outside look of the mansion. And Ken Anderson then was able to concentrate on putting a story together by creating sketches for the inside of the attraction. So here's where another trivia question comes to mind. Does anybody know what California structure served as a model and an inspiration for the inside of the Haunted Mansion attraction? It was located in It is located in San Jose, California, and it's the famous Winchester House. And I could probably spend an hour talking about the history of that particular building. It has 160 rooms. It's a 160-room mansion. Let's see if I can do it in about 2 minutes or so. So the mansion was built by Sarah Winchester, who was convinced by a psychic that she would become immortal if she continuously built onto the mansion. So she built hallways, staircases, brick walls, some of them leading to nowhere, to confuse the spirits. What spirits? The spirits of those who were killed by her father's invention, the Winchester rifle. So Sarah Winchester thought she was cursed, and she was pursued by these spirits. So she built these places, hallways and staircases and brick walls, going to nowhere. But it didn't work. She spent 38 years adding on to the house, and she died in 1922. It was this building that inspired Ken Anderson and his drawings. All right, so Ken Anderson's first attempt of a story for this attraction is best called, let's give it the name, The Legend of Captain Bartholomew Gore, who mysteriously disappeared one night. The initial story that Ken Anderson put together had guests being taken on a tour of the mansion and would experience things like portraits changing before their eyes, secret passageways, and inanimate objects coming to life. And there were some other special effects that were planned in his sketches. And suffice to say, a lot of them were inspired by Edgar Allan Poe stories. But in this version, one thing to keep in mind, like the present-day Haunted Mansion, we are introduced to a ghostly bride and some spooky things that happen. Keep in mind that this version is a walkthrough version, and with that brings some concerns to the Imagineers, like, so how do we put together cues that allow the guests to transition from one part of the, quote, tour to the next in a timely and effective manner? And keeping in mind the special effects that have to be timed. So anyways, that was version one, sort of put on the shelf, really wasn't something that Walt really was in love with. So Ken Anderson came up with another one, the second story idea. And that revolved around calling the attraction Bloodmare Manor, which was owned by the Blood family. Now, of course, this family was victim to an untimely and horrible death, but we don't know exactly what did them in. But now, they are haunting this establishment. And the story was supposed to also involve that, well, the manor was actually moved from another area in California to Disneyland for restoration purposes. But every morning, it seemed that the previous day's restorative efforts were wiped out. There were some elements to this story that were also in version one. For instance, how one person got walled up and is forever lost. But mostly this story was a little superficial and not deep enough for Walt. So we move on to the next storyline. The third version was pretty interesting because it involved having Walt record his voice and serve as the actual tour guide for the guests. However, just as the previous story, this one just did not seem deep enough to serve the attraction well. However, one element of this version seemed to foreshadow an element in today's attraction, and that is of a ghostly celebration. It still was not exactly what Walt wanted, and he said they were close but not quite there, and he would say, let's continue to look at other options. Okay, now we're going to go to the fourth attempt at a storyline. And as you can imagine by now, everyone's kind of anxious. You know, they wanted a storyline. They wanted Walt to approve of it. They wanted to put together a storyboard. They wanted to have complete and final sketches. They wanted Walt to approve of everything so that they could start building this attraction. At this point, Ken Anderson turned to the Disney Film Archives for some type of inspiration and decided that The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad would be a great model to work from to put together a story for the attraction. And, you know, with that comes The Headless Horseman. Actually, this version seemed very appealing, with such elements as Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, and a few other ghouls as part of the attraction. And I bet you never knew that Dracula and Frankenstein's monster were once considered. But Walt wanted something more original. The storyline involves some elements of the previous versions, but the climax would be a ghostly wedding celebration in the graveyard and the appearance of the Headless Horseman. Does that graveyard scene sound a little familiar? So a little bit of each storyline was taken to piece together a final storyline, and Walt assigned the assembling of mock-ups and special effects to Imagineers Raleigh Crump and Yale Gracie. And it took pretty much all of 1959 for these two to come up with a mock-up that they could show Walt, including lots of special effects. And by the way, if you have Disney Plus and you have watched the Behind the Attractions episode on the Haunted Mansion, you may recall how the Disneyland janitors were a bit spooked and asked Crump and Gracie to please leave the lights on in the room where they had been putting together the special effects and the mock-ups and all that spooky stuff. Well, they agreed to do this, but they were very mischievous. And so they rigged the room up so that when you walked in, sure, the lights were on, but when you walked in and tripped an infrared light trigger, the whole room went dark and all the ghostly special effects came on. I would have loved to have been a bug in the wall when that first happened. Now, remember, we said way back when that Walt first thought of this haunted attraction idea back in 1951, well before Disneyland opened. It was then revived in 1957 when he discussed the Disneyland expansion, but now it was the end of 1959, and he was still not 100% sure about the attraction. there were some really cool special effects that were designed. However, although these special effects were pretty spectacular, that took a little too long for each one to develop and recharge. And there was still the concern that the timing of these effects would be tricky because the attraction was still being planned as a walkthrough. Still not entirely convinced that the attraction was exactly what it should be, Walt put an indefinite hold on the project. Eventually, the project was brought back from the dead in 1961. Did you see what I did there? And by 1963, the mansion was built. The outside structure was built. It was a shell, but it was built. But there was nothing inside. Why? Well, it's 1963, and before they could start putting stuff together, which really they still weren't sure about, the Imagineers were taken off the project because it was now time to focus on the pavilions to be built for the 1964 World's Fair. The Haunted Mansion project did not come online again until well after the World's Fair had run its course. And when the Haunted Mansion was revived, it was put into the hands of Imagineers Mark Davis and Claude Coates. However, in my opinion, I really didn't think that the project really took on some traction until animator X Tencio joined the team. He was to serve as the scriptwriter for the attraction. He was assigned to pull everything together. Although it seemed that they were in the home stretch, there were still a few loose ends that needed to be tied. There was an unsettling for the storyline as a whole. They weren't sure about all the special effects, and they actually weren't just sure about what the overall goal was. The main problem was that some of the project team saw this as being a classic haunted house attraction, while others wanted to focus on the special effects, while others thought there should be some kind of a comedy element that would best entertain the guests. So, well, really wasn't sure what to do. Although, there was one thing that was clear in his mind, and that was that he wanted the Haunted Mansion to be different from all others. And he came to a decision that this attraction should be a sort of a potpourri of different things, and he even suggested that it be a Museum of the Weird. So that kind of was the approach that they were going to take, and they were getting close. It was 1965, which was a year after the World's Fair, but the Haunted Mansion had to be put on hold again because the Imagineers were pulled off that project because they were now assigned to take those pavilions in the 1964 World's Fair, bring them to Disneyland, and put them in place. Not to mention, there was another attraction that was ahead of the Haunted Mansion, and that was the Pirates of the Caribbean. So you take that, and oh, by the way, there was another redesign of the Tomorrowland area of Disneyland, which pushed Haunted Mansion even further back in the queue. Not just the back burner, but the way back burner. So once again, there was a roadblock to the Haunted Mansion being developed. However, as much as Haunted Mansion was the victim of so many obstacles that halted creation, decision-making, and production, it was that middle piece, decision-making, that was to suffer the toughest blow. That blow came in 1966 when Walt Disney passed away. At that time, the Haunted Mansion was yet to be finished. You know, the inner, quote, guts of the attraction was still up in the air. And the person to whom the Imagineers looked to for that final decision was no longer around. That was a huge blow. Everyone agreed that, as Walt had suggested, the attraction should have an assortment of components having both scary and comedic elements. Both Coates and Davis agreed to honor Walt's wish. So we eventually got both. If you notice, we go from scary to funny in today's Haunted Mansion. Today's Haunted Mansion version 5.0. The combo of the components, the stretching room, the spooky hallway, the seance room, the dining hall, the attic, the graveyard scenes, all pulled together by Ex Astensio script, which was pretty much disjointed, as each scene kind of speaks for itself. Basically, it was Raleigh Crump's influence and Imagineering know-how that worked to figure out a way to marry Mark Davis's storyline and Walt's Museum of the Weird into the eventual resulting attraction. And as I mentioned, Atencio would be the scriptwriter. I think one of the most important decisions that was to be made was one that was influenced by the 1964 World's Fair Imagineering efforts, and that was that the attraction would not be a walkthrough, but a ride-through attraction. And I think this was huge because it allowed the Imagineers more guidance as to the timing of each group of special effects in each section of the attraction, much like we see in a lot of the attractions today. You know, looking back over the years and the several attempts at the effort to come up with a perfect storyline, you can get an appreciation for the effort put forth by the Imagineers to get it right. And I'm convinced that it wasn't version 1, version 2, version 3, or version 4 that was right for the Haunted Mansion. But it was Haunted Mansion's version 5.0 that was just right. And that version had a little bit of each of the previous versions. And I think that's what happens when you get creative and you try to develop things. You stick with something that you like, and then you add to that, you supplement that. For the record, the Haunted Mansion opened its gates in Disneyland on August 9th, 1969. And yeah, it took 18 years from the first moment Walt first thought about that family theme park in an area with a haunted house area to that opening day where the Doom Buggies waited to take guests on a haunted tour. You know, the Haunted Mansion will always be a beloved attraction, and for me, it kind of greatly influenced my passion for Halloween to the point where I went all out on Halloween. And like the Haunted Mansion, my homestead had both scary and comedic elements. Before getting to my front door for goodies, the trick-or-treaters had to maneuver past my black light alley that had strange goblins and spiders and ghostly footprints on the grass, all illuminated by black light. Then they had to gather their courage to walk through my graveyard with the three coffins, multiple gravestones, and a very pleasant vanilla scent from my fog machine, which through my own special effect had fog rising from various spots in the ground. As they passed the graveyard, grim grinning ghosts played in the bushes. You then had to walk past the 6-foot mummy who was motion activated and would turn her head and stare at you with her piercing green eyes and yell out. But like in Haunted Mansion, your courage was rewarded, because a few yards away was my dancing and singing skeleton dressed in a tuxedo. And then, as you walked past him, there it was, my congratulatory area filled with funny Halloween symbols and countless Disney-themed Halloween signs. And that brought smiles to the little witches and goblins, as smiles were brought to our faces towards the end of our Haunted Mansion tour. Did I mention I lived on a street named Candy Lane? A local television station decided to visit me on Halloween one year and, of course, wrapped up the piece by telling everyone the name of the street. And I know what you're thinking. Don't worry. The piece was shown at the 11 o'clock news hour. If it had been shown at the 6 o'clock hour, I would have definitely run out of candy. As it was, I had given out on average about 500 pieces of candy every Halloween. So it was obvious that the Haunted Mansion had an impact on me personally, and it motivated me to treat Halloween night as an attraction whereby I could bring smiles to my visitors. So as we close on this discussion, I'd like you to ask yourself, how has the Haunted Mansion version 5.0 affected you personally? For me, it wasn't that a ghost was going to follow me out of the attraction, as we are warned as we are approaching the end of the ride. But instead, what followed me home was a piece of Walt Disney's influence, who in the end wanted to entertain his guests. And that's just what Haunted Mansion version 5.0 does today. It entertains and it brings a smile to our faces. For my co-hosts, Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean and, of course, the immensely talented Chris Saliopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the road and in the parks, and also, hopefully, in a dune buggy. Hurry back.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.